If your eyes are closed, does it really matter who's fucking you in the ass? This is The Unshow. All right, man. Once again, we're gathering here in a meeting of the minds. Two and a half minds, actually. You decide who's the half. I'm the Schmooze Master, Jeff Schneider, sitting in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, along with my good buddy, my vaunted sidekick, the greatest of all time, undisputed, undefeated, Dobie Maxwell.
Depends who you talk to. My eyes are closed here. I'm just wondering who's someone should take their ring off. Maybe that's their watch.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, if your eyes are closed, does it really matter?
I don't know.
That's the point.
Would they have the common courtesy to give me a reach around?
That's you know, they like to keep it nice and greasy so it goes in easy.
Keep it greasy.
Yeah, you know, grease it up and grease it down and drive that truck through the heart of town. You know, Frank Zappa, man, you know. And that's the way it is in the world.
The Zappitude. I wonder if Zappa would make it today. I mean, he was a pretty much of a renegade artist when he did it.
Oh,
did his
man.
Thing.
Unbelievable. Unbelievably brilliant.
But I mean, he had, you know, was Barking Pumpkin Records the whole
Yes, and controlling his own distribution. He hated the corporations. You know, he saw what they did to artists. And like you talk about, royalties, ripping them off. Guys never making a dime. Making millions for the owners. Making millions for the labels. So he said, fuck this. I'm going to control the vertical and the horizontal. And that's what he did. And the guy was brilliant. He was so brilliant that his own country didn't understand him. And when he was writing symphony orchestra music that only got played in Germany and on the continent, you know, in Europe, you know, never in the United States, never. And the guy was brilliant. He and like to our Unshow credo, he could do brilliant lowbrow and brilliant highbrow. You know
yeah.
what I mean? You know, he could do great pee-pee caca novelty songs with great musicianship, you know, and then real high level. Musicianship on a jazz-like level. He could play jazz, you know, blues, whatever it was. The guy had a feel for anything that was brilliant, and he absorbed all types of music, and they kind of marinated in him, and he could, you know, create his own hybrid. You know, the guy was amazing.
Do you think he was rich?
I think he was comfortable, as the Jews would say.
Another old joke, Myron Cohn, guy gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
Are you okay? I'm comfortable.
Yeah, I'm comfortable. Right. I love it.
No, are you comfortable? No, are you comfortable? No, I make a good living.
I make a good living, right. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the joke.
I love it.
Oh, but getting back to Zappa, I think I'm a big fan of George Clinton, who a lot of times people call the black Frank Zappa.
Really?
Is the white George Clinton.
Did they ever work together?
Some of the musicians were being bastardized. Clinton, for whatever reason, I mean, to have such a big conglomeration, someone's going to bitch. I'm not saying Clinton was a total honest guy. I don't know the situation, but a lot of people have accused him of not being the most, they said they ripped him off. That Clinton, again, it's just going by what people, the musicians have said, and Zappa kind of swooped in and tried for some of the same musicians that Clinton had. This guy named Glenn Goines, who died at 25 of Hodgkin's disease, which just had a haunting voice. When the mothership landed, he was the one with the big spaceship. If you've never been seen the P-Funk in the 70s, they had a spaceship inside the arena, and it would land. And he would call the mothership with this haunting song, "A Swing Down Sweet Chariot." And it's just like if we're in church, man. This guy could just wail, and he was only in his early 20s, and Zappa wanted him really bad. He was trying to court him, and then he got sick and died.
Oh, so he had Hodgkin's disease.
Hodgkin's disease. Yeah. Glenn Goines. Yeah. Some stuff. He's on YouTube. Well, check him out, man. It's a fantastic singer. And Clinton talked about that. He would have been, he said he would have been, you know, a superstar.
Yeah. So, but you don't know if Frank and George Clinton ever worked together.
No, I don't think they worked together. Yeah. Frank died in, I believe, the early 90s, maybe?
92. 92,
yeah,
93.
I wonder how close to age they were.
Yeah.
Well,
Frank was like 52, 51, 52, 53 when he passed away.
Okay.
Sad, man. There's a great photograph by Richard Avedon of Frank Zappa probably 2-3 months before he passed away. It's in his book called The 60s.
Uh-huh.
And Frank, you know, just a haunting death look in his eye. You could just see it, you know, just there. And, you know, when you respect somebody as an artist, and a guy who's prolific and puts it out, you know, on a very high level always.
Yeah.
He cares about the music to the exclusion of life itself. Like, it's a big issue with great geniuses. You see this in history all the time. They're not necessarily good parents, or they're not necessarily good friends, because their children invariably become their art, you know. So Frank, as a dad, he would be in his bunker, his recording studio, you know, for 2-3 days at a clip. So
right.
The kids, you know, didn't see him a lot, and he didn't strike me as a particularly warm guy, a loving father in a physicalness, you know, an organic way.
Right.
But his kids were the songs he created and the art he created and the legacy and the body of work he left behind, you know. So you see this with, you know, Einstein and Freud and all these great geniuses who midwifed new movements single-handedly almost, but their marriages and their children suffered, you know, mental illness.
Snooki's in there.
Right. Snooki's in there. She'll probably not be a great mother because she's brilliant in what she does. Wow.
Frank Zappa here, born December 21st, 1940. Died December 4th, 93.
Right. I remember that day, too. I was living in California at the time. I was at the Improv on Melrose. And I believe either Moon Unit or Dweezil came into the Improv shortly around that time after the death. I remember them. I was going out. They were breezing through the door coming in. I don't know why. But I thought it was kind of peculiar. I don't know how people mourn. Who knows? But it was, it was a sad day because the guy was so respected. It wasn't like Davy Jones died.
Right.
Man, I never saw an outpouring for a guy like Davy Jones. I mean, people. I'm not saying he shouldn't deserve respect. I don't mean that really.
He seemed to be beloved.
He was beloved. You know, all these 13-year-old girls who are now 56, 57 years old.
Yeah.
So when he passes away, they're suddenly 13-year-old girls again, and it dredges up those feelings.
Yeah, but I mean, there's something to be said about that, too. I mean, every time I've seen him interviewed, he just seemed like a nice, upbeat, fun guy.
Just, no, he just was. He was. He was. Nice, warm, but, you know, warm. Not much of a musician, not much of a singer.
I think he'd admit that.
Other people wrote the music. Other musicians played the instruments. You know, the Wrecking Crew, you know, played in a lot of their cuts.
Yeah.
They were manufactured by the network, NBC, looking for a band because the Beatles were so popular. You know how it goes.
Sure.
And they hit. But to put them in the same league as Frank Zappa, my God, I mean, where do you draw the line? There is quality questions here.
Well, that's true.
But people accuse me of being having a superiority complex all the time, you know. I said, well, you know, they're, what are you going to tell me? Shakespeare is not any better than... My Gun is Quick by Mickey Spillane. There's not a quantifiable opinion about that. Maybe it's all deconstruction theory. You know,
would you
it doesn't
agree
matter.
That I think people have a large amount of people have an inane need for fairness. We want things to be equal and fair, and everybody's fair, and everybody's the same. And life just is not like that. I wish it were, but it's not.
Well, but life would be not worth living if everything was the same.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's got to be majesty and great creative, the coalescing of great art. I mean, of ingredients into great art through the conduit of the artist. And there has to be. And there has to be some better than other. You can't put the painter of shite, Thomas Kincaid, on the same level as Matisse or Picasso. How do you do that? But yet, Thomas Kincaid sells $50 million worth of his dreck every year.
It's all marketing, man.
And it's on. He's on home shopping. He's got galleries around the country and brilliant people.
Is Andy Warhol a great artist? Was he?
I don't know. It's open to interpretation. I see both sides of the story of that. You know, you could argue that. But you never see both sides of the story or hear that about Thomas Kincaid. Never. But
right.
You would hear it from the submental patrons who buy that shit. Those gooey, overly sentimental oil paintings of lighthouses in purple. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And they're made in sweatshops. He doesn't paint them. They're made in sweatshops in China. They're painted. And he signs off on them. He does the prototype.
Wow.
It's brutal.
Well, the cartoonist, you know who Jim Davis is? He draws Garfield?
Yes.
Same thing. That's a sweatshop.
Is it? Is it?
Yeah, someone draws. He basically, I don't know if he writes them, but he, you know, someone else draws them, doesn't.
Yeah.
He just oversees it all.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's counting the money from the mugs and the calendars and the T-shirts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, how do you compare the two? So there's got to be opinion regarding it. It doesn't mean somebody's superior because I enjoy Mozart over, the Archies, for crying out loud. Sugar, sugar. Come on.
You're my candy girl. You got me wanting you.
Mozart, right?
Yes, Mozart. Mozart.
He's talking about. Can we talk about little Johnny Mozart?
No, Mozart.
Mozart.
T-S-A-R-T.
Yeah, I mean, there is sophistication and there is command and attack in music, you know, that you appreciate. Or 110 pieces that are in concert with one another in a symphony. You know what I mean? I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm not saying you can't enjoy some dirty boogie and some lowdown blues, man. There's brilliant practitioners of that because they bring a humanity to it, a third dimension, you know, the human experience. That's what I say about, you know, why jazz is so great, because other than the blues and jazz, they're the only two types of music where four strangers can come together. And if their talents are prodigious enough, out of that, great improvisation and genius and art can come out of it. You know what I mean? When they jam.
Sure.
But classical music can't do that. Pop music can't do that. You know what I'm saying? But when four blues men who don't know each other get into a room, somebody lays down a riff, and they're off to the races because they've lived that life.
Yeah.
You know, and same thing with jazz guys, man. I mean, the whole album, the famous Miles Davis record, damn, I'm losing it. Famous.
Birth of the Cool?
Not Birth of the Cool. It's the one with the word blue in it.
Blue Balls.
Yeah, Blue Balls. Miles Davis, come on. Why am I doing this? I should know this damn thing. Kind of Blue. Sorry. Kind of Blue. Anyway, all those tunes on Kind of Blue were all Miles did was come down with a little riff, a little beginning riff, and all the musicians came together and fleshed it all out, and he never wrote the charts for it. And it's one of the seminal albums that if you're a jazz guy starting out, you got to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of Blue, Coltrane's Blue Train, another one that's brilliant. You know, if you're starting out to have a collection or to listen, you got to have those two records, you know. And it all comes out of improvisation and community. It's a great communal effort because we're all, you know, we're all human. It really shows the humanity of music and what it can do in a great positive way when you can get four strange people together, strangers, to come out with great art and genius after it's all done. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, good points.
You know, I enjoy classical, but it takes a lot more. You have to have arrangements and big charts and all that kind of stuff, you know. And it's a different kind of experience. But if you really want to see how it's done on the fly, listen to guys jamming, man, you know. New Orleans Dixieland kind of jazz, Preservation Hall stuff, man, you can just hear the horror and the slavery and the whippings. You know, in the music, in the tones of the trumpet players and the trombone players, you know the New Orleans style funeral marching, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to love that. They're celebrating.
What you like Wynton Marsalis?
I love him. I love him, and I love him more for his historical knowledge, the way he can narrate documentaries and just talk about it. You know?
I agree. Great ambassador. Very interesting, likable. How can I say? He's a classy guy.
Yes,
yeah, I agree with you.
And he really, really appreciates the history and really, really appreciates, you know, like the old guys, you know, like Buddy Bolden, the first recognized jazz trumpet player probably turn of the, excuse me, turn of the 19th century, you know, never recorded, you know, stories, you know, guys who played with him back in the early 1900s would talk about Buddy Bolden. He's a black musician.
Never recorded.
Nope. He didn't have the technology back then. And he you know, kind of died young, too, you know, so.
So there's 472 episodes of Pawn Stars, but Buddy Bolden never got to record.
Never got to record because he was a man out of his own time, you know.
Never just, got a dinner.
Never got a dinner. So, but you ask Wynton Marsalis about him, and he can wax an hour about Buddy Bolden. Then Louis goes into Louis Armstrong, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and Louis was
his
man.
From New Orleans? Was Louis from New Orleans?
Yeah, New Orleans, right. Mm-hmm. And it was a Jewish family. A white family that kind of adopted him in a sense and bought him his first cornet when he was, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years old.
You know? A Dodge cornet?
Dodge cornet. And he always would talk about this family, too, from time to time. Mm-hmm. That he loved them because they helped him, you know. And it wasn't no prejudice, no racism, you know. It was great.
Yeah.
You know? It wasn't like Florence Foster Jenkins, if you ever heard her recordings.
Flojo?
Yeah. Florence Foster Jenkins. She was a society matron, mm-hmm, who loved opera, loved it, and did a lot of charity work for operas.
Yeah.
But she fancied herself as an opera singer, as a great diva.
Right.
And she was so off key and so brutal that she would invite people over for fundraising to her penthouse.
Yeah.
Because her husband was rich. Mm-hmm. And she would sing, and people would laugh, and never, and she had laughing ears like a lot of comedians do. You know, they don't hear it the way it's supposed to be heard, the way it really is happening.
Right.
So she got this false sense of herself, and sells out Carnegie Hall because she thinks she's a brilliant artist.
Wow.
Packs Carnegie Hall, makes a ton of money for the charity, right?
Yeah.
Somebody records this. It's probably in the 30s and 40s. Somebody records it, and she finds out she's a butt of a lot of jokes over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Died 1 month later.
Wow.
Now, you can go on. God, I got a loogie.
Chief Haka Loogie.
Of undetermined origin. I'm going to pass that on to the listeners.
Thank you.
It's open for interpretation, this loogie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you can go on to Amazon, and there's some recordings of her singing. And there actually was a play on Broadway play for a little while. We saw it, my wife and I, between her and her accompanist, who worked with her for like 10 or 15 years. Florence Foster Jenkins. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And died after the joke was on her, and she realized that she's been a butt of all these jokes. 1 month later, she dies. It's kind of a sad story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was her lifespan?
I don't know. If you go Google her right now, if you wanted to do that, her name is Florence Foster Jenkins. I just love the story, you know, how people are so blinded by their own delusions, you know.
Yeah.
1868 to 1944 she lived.
I gotcha, yeah.
Yeah.
Narcissa
Crazy.
Florence Foster. Her name is Narcissa. Perfect.
Yeah, Narcissa, right, Florence Foster. And she married into Jenkins was her married name.
Okay.
And he was a rich guy, and she, you know, had good intentions about raising money for her charity. She really did. She did a lot of that. But she was friggin' deluded. And if you go on YouTube, somebody's got it on YouTube. You can go check that out. It's awesome. Also, another thing to listen to, too, if you can find that. You know how they used to take young boys? We'll be right back. No.
and castrate them?
And castrate them, thinking their voices are going to be permanently in a remission of beauty, where for the rest of their lives they could sing the soprano in certain operas and so forth. You know, they were called castrati. But there's a I think a recording of the last castrati, the last one that was ever done, ever had the operation performed on him, 1908-9. You probably can find that and listen to that. That is harrowing to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I would love to have been at that pitch meeting.
We're going to cut your nuts off.
You
okay. Know,
what do you think of that? You're going to love it. You're going to be a superstar.
But you get all the cannoli you want.
But I'll tell you, the luckiest young boy ever was the kid standing behind the last castrati.
I would wholeheartedly concur, Batman.
Oh, my God. He heaved the sigh that O.J. Simpson couldn't muster after the verdict was in. Oh, man. But the first castrati, how did that fly?
It flew pretty low, terrible, man.
You look at the history of it. And a lot of the boys' voices didn't come out like they had hoped, you know, the beauty of it. It changed a little bit. You know what I mean? Made it a little more pitchy, you know?
Right.
And it wasn't that successful. But that just shows you what people, what lengths people will go to, you know? The control of this thing. You know, the apogee of art. And how can we get there? Well, we'll castrate these young boys, and they'll be able to sing these parts forever. But it doesn't work like that. You know, they have terrible lives. Most of them did, you know?
Yeah, I bet they did.
Yeah. The castrati. The castrati. I mean, they didn't go out looking for chicks after the show.
No, I'm sure they did. Maybe to do their hair.
Yeah, I mean, really rough. So Florence Foster Jenkins, check her out, man.
The original Sopranos, the castrati.
Yeah, Florence Foster Jenkins, the last castrati.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's desperation time for that, you know. But, you know, anybody who can play music or any kind of art on a high level, you know, that to me is the most closest we'll ever get to the Godhead. And that's the big issue, you know, instead of putting a face on it like most religions do, you know, they put a face on it. And once you put a face on it, bad things happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So why should we be so arrogant? Why not just take the randomness and the infinitesimal odds that existence affords us through the right chemistry and being on the only planet that has this chemistry and take the opportunity to create great things. You know what I mean? Music, comedy, art, sculpture, dance, theater.
Peanut brittle.
Peanut brittle.
Pro wrestling.
The best peanut brittle you could ever have, because all artists are trying to get to the Godhead. They're trying to explain the unexplainable, the inscrutable, and it can't be achieved. But it's better than sitting on your fucking ass watching reality TV for 50 years and throwing a few bucks in the collection plate on Sunday.
So sit on your ass and listen to The Un Show.
Well, that's part of it, you know. We're trying to drop a little bit of goodness into the life force, and maybe it'll have some resonance, maybe it won't. But it's better than going to Walmart, you know, and buying some guns, some ammo, or killing innocent, you know, animals. Like in The Simpsons, you know, shooting a deer in Moe's view was like shooting a beautiful man. So I think it's important to have a creative life, whether you make money from it or not. Everybody out there listening, man, get off your ass and quit watching Snooki. You ain't getting none. She ain't giving you none.
The Snookstress?
Right, she's pregnant now, man. Big deal.
Yeah, who did it? Everybody.
undefined protoplasm. That's how she looks to me.
A very special episode.
You know, when John Hamm called Kim Kardashian an idiot.
He was right.
He was right. You know, what does she bring to the party? She's got big tits, a big ass. So if you need a place to put your new TV, she's got a place for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and they make a lot of money. Okay, I don't get the resonance and the you know, any depth to anything, you know, and that's how far the bar has lowered, in my humble opinion.
Mm-hmm. I get you.
You know what I mean?
I do.
So that's why Davy Jones gets, you know, faded worldwide.
And Frank Zappa never really had a hit. Did he have a top 40 hit? I don't think he ever did.
I think he had maybe.
Valley Girl was his daughter.
Right.
I mean, he might have produced it, but I don't think that was – he didn't have any hits himself.
I think Don't Eat the Yellow Snow got some top 40 airplay back in the 60s.
Oh, did it? Okay.
But other than that, no. But, you know, when he passed away, it wasn't like the world was mourning for him, but the Monkees got a ton of stuff on everywhere, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true.
You know, they're manufactured. Not a whole cloth. They were cast.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you find that a little peculiar?
No, I find it human nature, man. The masses are asses. It's like some people only have a certain degree of need for anything. Comedy is that way. Music is that way. Writing, I think, is that way. It's like, okay, this satiates my needs. Why do I have to seek out anything that is considered better? Because I'm okay with it.
I understand, but don't you find it a little hollow? It's not as satisfying?
You know, I do, yes. You do, yes.
It's like eating... It's like eating cupcakes. You know, if you keep eating them long enough, they're not going to be as satisfying. You want something that's a little more nourishing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work like that, does it?
No, it is. It doesn't.
No.
That's very sad. It's very frustrating.
It is very frustrating. Yeah. So that's why you get shows, you know, these radio shows, commercial radio that are so terrible. or news talk on dying AM stations, you know what I mean? They're dying. And they don't want to change, and they want to have the same white guys doing the same white news with white opinions. There's no flavor at all. KDKA in Pittsburgh is dying on the vine here, you know?
Sure.
Same shit, news, weather, sports every 4 minutes. We can't deviate from that. We don't think that the listenership has any other desire or tastes outside of this purview that we built in 1920 when Marconi gave us the keys to the station.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a total mess. And people can enjoy a lot of things. That's the beauty of humanity. It's so multifaceted, you know? It's like a baseball pitcher with only one pitch. Eventually, people get tired of it, and they start hitting you. If you want to be successful, you need four pitches. You got to mix it up, and that's what good entertainment and good radio is.
Yeah, George Clinton talked about that with the funk versus disco. He's in the 70s, and he said disco is basically like doing it with one stroke. Fucking your old lady with one stroke the whole time.
I love it.
Yeah.
And you're not using any billiard chalk to put a little English on that sugar plum, are you?
No, not at all.
No.
He had an album called Funkin' Teleki versus the Placebo Syndrome.
Yeah.
The Placebo Syndrome was that they put up the same dreck, shit, pablum, crap, dookie, mess. And that's, I think, the public is getting fed that, and they like it after a while.
Yeah, so when you're in bed with your old lady, man, you put a little billiard chalk on the tip of your tongue so you can apply a little rotation, a little English to that sugar plum.
You come in through the outdoor,
that's
if you know
right.
what I'm saying.
Yeah, you want to get that zzzz on that sugar plum.
Up for the downstroke.
Right, he's got a perfect point.
Yeah.
Perfect point. Life is so big. Why not try to bite as much as you can off, a big bite of it, instead of reducing it all the time? And that's what humans do. They reduce. Manageable bites, manageable, always manageable. You know? Completely amazing to me. And that's why things fall in disfavor. You know? And then the new paradigm comes up, or the new pop, whatever's hot. You know? That's how it is.
Hopefully we can be a paradigm for somebody.
Yeah, that's why we do this on show, man. No dogmas or isms.
Hopefully just someone will say, God, just cutting through the molecules of wetness like an eel through seaweed.
I was eating seaweed the other a couple nights ago with my cousin Kirk.
I went to
see Speak. He's from San Francisco, so he buys seaweed, these little wafers of seaweed. And I go, oh, my God, this tastes like the nastiest pussy I've ever eaten, Kirk. I'm sorry.
like Bella Abzug's clit.
Oh, my God. You got that smell like you're eating some chick out under the boardwalk, you know, in Santa Monica Pier. But it's good for you.
It's good for you. It gets your minerals content up.
Oh, yeah, man. I want to thank everybody for listening to The Unt Show. No dogmas, no isms. Because we don't give a shit, and we prove it every day from 6:30 to 7 on PKN Radio. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on Podomatic. And we'll see you on the other side. We love you.
Hey, Schmoozemaster, that's the best show we ever did.
Oh, you got that right, bro. You can take that to the motherfucking bank right now.
Later.
Bye-bye.